It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I came to Preston, I knew it was a big club, and then to win player of the year was fantastic. To now come back, coach, I love the place. I'm very lucky.
P&E Pod. Preston North End Podcast.
This is the official podcast of the one and only Preston North End Football Club. Welcome to PNE Pod. My name's Niall McCorn.
And I'm Neil Mellor. We'll be talking to some former teammates of mine, some famous Preston North End fans, and...
we've got Fenners, Andy Fensom, on the show.
Fenners, he'll be telling us about his long throw, telling us about playing on the plastic pitch, promotion days as well for Preston North End.
And of course, still at the club as a youth team coach as well, so he's been telling us about his transition into that.
Yep, still nurturing, developing young players that will hopefully... you're playing in the North End team in years to come.
Okay, make sure you don't miss another episode of PNE Pod by hitting subscribe or follow wherever you listen to podcasts. But without further ado, let's jump into our chat with Andy Fensom. Our guest on PNE Pod today is the 1995 North End Player of the Year, Andy Fensom. How are you doing?
That's a long time ago, isn't it?
Does that make you feel old?
Good afternoon. I am old. It doesn't make me feel old. I am old.
What have you done to win player of the year? Apart from be the best player because goalies, strikers get it.
I don't know. I think I was that poor probably the season before that people looked at me and I must have had an improved season. But it's a massive honour.
When you look back at your career, being a player of the season anywhere, it's a proud moment for any player, isn't it?
Without doubt. I think I was close to it at Cambridge one year. And in the back of your head, you think, oh, yeah, I've had a good season. And then... to come to Preston, and again, my first season, I don't think I was a shining light. Didn't put myself probably in the best light with the supporters at times. And then to win it the year after, you look back on it and it's a proud moment.
Have you still got it somewhere in your house?
Yes, it'll definitely be probably in the same place as it was when my wife first seen it, up in the loft somewhere. I think it stayed out for about a year and then she was like, you need to be moving this.
What do they look like these days, player of the season trophies?
Got no idea. I didn't get
made
near
of crystal
one.
And stuff.
Yeah. Now, no, listen, years ago, it was a proper trophy type thing and a shield. And
proper event though, isn't it? The old player of the year, because I remember we'd all go and nobody would know. You sort of sat there thinking, have I got an outside chance? but it was a big deal.
Yeah, it's black tie and everything, isn't it?
It was a proper tie event and a big achievement.
Definitely wasn't a black tie event when ours was years and years ago, but it was a big event. And like you say, you don't know. And I remember players coming up to me going, oh, this will be you. And you're thinking, it would be nice, but also you get a lot of stick for it.
You came up short in the playoffs that season, the season you won Player of the Year. Would you have swapped that Player of the Year award to have been successful in the playoffs?
Yeah, definitely, because I was lucky that I went to Wembley with Cambridge, played in the very first playoff final.
What was that, Cambridge for you?
Cambridge versus, oh no, you put me on the spot.
Come on, the very first, I'm thinking about
Chesterfield.
Chesterfield,
Kevin Davis, I think, played against
us. Lost.
So, pardon?
You've lost the very first one.
No, we won.
Oh, you've won it.
We won. We were, I think, 17th in the league at the time. John Beck took over at Cambridge. We had an unbelievable unbeaten run. We scraped into the playoff places. The very first, like I say, it was the very first playoff finals. We won the final and it was, I don't know, really strange. I was looking at it as a Division 4 player then. Played at Wembley. I thought that was it was unbelievable at the time. And again, for me, I was thinking, I've played at Wembley here. Obviously, the old Wembley now. And then to come to Preston, we played at Wembley. We obviously lost. And then to get into the playoffs the year after and then lose was devastating. It hurt.
Who did a young Andy Fensham support?
Young player supported Liverpool at the time, simply because I think my brother, who was 3 years younger than me, supported Man United. So there had to be some rivalry in the house. I come from Northamptonshire, so Northampton was my hometown, but they weren't doing great at the time. So like most kids, you go for someone that's doing really well.
And what about a player that you sort of looked at and thinking, yeah, I want to be someone like that?
That was Kenny Dalglish and people. Phil Neal used to live or come from where we were. So being a defender, I was like, Phil Neal, he's achieved. Mm-hmm. He achieved really well. So probably somebody like that.
Did you ever take penalties like Phil Neal?
I ended up scoring my very first league goal, taking a penalty, and I'd been pestering the manager for months that I was banned from shooting, by the way. That's how bad I was. I was literally banned from shooting at Cambridge. There was an end called the allotment end, and it was open, obviously. Couldn't afford a lot of footballs at the time, so I was banned from shooting. And then Dion Dublin was penalty taker. He became injured. And I was like, my hand was straight up. I was there, got given the job. I don't think we received the penalty for like 3 months. Honestly, it was like unbelievable. And the game that I actually scored my first penalty, first league goal, I was ill as a dog. I was sick as a parrot. I told the manager I didn't want to play. I didn't feel I was up to playing. I had the flu. And you know what man flu's like for us footballers? It's devastating. Bit of a coffee, a sniffle. And yeah, we ended up getting a penalty. I took it, we scored. I ended up playing the 90 minutes out of it because he wouldn't bring me off.
You mentioned John Beck there when you were at Cambridge, but you were also managed by him at North End. As someone who'd already experienced being managed by him, did that help you or were you able to kind of guide some of the other lads into how it might have gone?
I remember getting the phone call to come up. I think it was Gary Peters at the time phoned me up saying, we want you up here, come up here, you know the system. And I did. I played for John for 4 years, played in his very first game that he managed. And so I'd seen the system evolve and take off, and we were very successful at Cambridge with it. We got found out, don't get me wrong, and you have to change things, and we weren't really willing to change at the time. So coming to Preston, knowing exactly the system that he had, yeah, it was definitely helpful for me. And yes, I knew it inside out.
What did you know about Preston before you signed? That they had a plastic pitch?
I knew that they had a plastic pitch because I knew obviously that Luton at the time were one and QPR were another one. And I'd played on both of those at the same time. I'd played on the plastic at Preston. We were the first team to come up and play in tracksuit bottoms with Cambridge. So there we were in baggy tracksuit bottoms, shorts over the top, socks over the knees.
How was that allowed? How was the referee said you're okay with
goalkeepers
that?
Goalkeepers wore them.
Okay.
Goalkeepers wore them. So we were very...
You must have felt a little bit silly wearing tracky pants.
During the week, building up to it, John and Gary had said, like, you are wearing them. There's no argument about it. Everybody wears them. I want you tackling. I want you going in exactly the same. If you slide in and you get a bit of a plastic burn, I'll give you a fiver. It was daft. It was like anything to sort of counteract the negatives of playing on it. So yeah, so when we came for Cambridge, we wore tracksuit bottoms. So when I came back to Preston, by then I knew everybody was wearing them apart from Tony Ellis.
Did you train in them as well? Was it just
yeah,
the game?
Yeah. No, we trained in them as well when we played on the plastic. Yeah, it was just, it's what it was. It was dangerous when you look back at it, but
What was it like though as a player? Because for me, in my era, I couldn't even train on the Astro and it was 3G, 4G. And I was saying, I can't go on there. And that was like a car park.
The sound base, yeah, it was just firm. And obviously when I played at Preston, it was coming to the end of its life. So there was bits turning up, there was like lines in it.
Did you know where those little bad bits were, where not to play the ball and all that?
I wasn't that good. I couldn't have told you that. We just knew that like at times there were sand in corners and things like that, because that was the system we played. But yeah, playing on the very last game of it was a bit of a relief as well.
Yeah, but how big was that game? Because the last game was against Torquay, wasn't it, in the playoff semi-final? We've spoken to Ryan Kidd, who said it was one of the best games he's ever played in. And was that the same for you?
Yeah, without doubt. The build-up to the game was just different. We'd got into the playoffs, and the day of the game, I think we'd stayed away the night before, I think it's Southport even, and David Moyes took a walk at the time. He led a team walk. We went out and we sat down and we were outside. We sat as a group and had a chat. And to be fair to Moyes, he's gone on to be a great manager. He sort of sat us down and said, look, lads, this could be a last chance for some of you to get to Wembley. This could be the first chance of many for some of you. We play a system that probably we're not comfortable with or happy with. But whatever you do on that game, that night, you stand up and you be counted. If you make a mistake, you hold your hand up, you go chasing. If you do good things, let's keep it going. And literally we started at 100 mile an hour. The game was so fast, so fast. The crowd were bouncing. You get involved in it. We were a team at the time that reveled in the fact that we could play 100 mile an hour because you had to have quality, but at times it didn't really matter. So I remember the ball going out, ball boys would throw you the ball. You chucked it straight in. Luckily, that was one of my strengths. I had a long throw. So we just got at Torquay straight away because we were behind.
Did you get any of the AstroTurf at the end? Because a lot of fans did get sort of a piece of the Astro.
I think I was on somebody's shoulders at the time when we were coming off that pitch. I was certainly caught up on somebody's shoulders and moving across the pitch. And there used to be a really good photograph, which was on a wall all the way down one side of the wall. There was me, Moisey, Karts, all on people's shoulders, like celebrating with the supporters.
Did losing in the playoffs make you more determined to go and win the league the following season? How do you recover from a low like that to then turn it into like one of the biggest highs you can have as a player?
It was bittersweet for me because we'd lost in the playoffs. I had one player of the year. I played every game up until the Christmas and then I never played again. I was dropped and left out of the squad. But for the team and for the group of players that we had, the team was a good team and we had some really good players. Don't want to count myself in that, believe me. And so for us to then go up was a fantastic achievement.
When you think back to that period of falling out of the team, do you think there's anything you could have done differently or sometimes you just have to sit and accept that that's the game? Or
I think it's choices. I think being a coach now, sometimes you're not going to change somebody's opinion. I'd been with Gary for 4 or 5 years, probably with Cambridge and Preston. He obviously decided that I wasn't right or he had somebody better. In my opinion, that wasn't the case, but that's me as a player. I wanted to play every week. I remember knocking on his door every week and saying those exact words. But as a coach and as a manager, you've got to pick a team and you stand by that team. So for me, looking back on it, there's no hard feelings. I just feel like I missed out slightly.
What were you like in training, knowing that you weren't in the team?
I would like to think I was good in training, to be perfect. I think I was, that's one of my strengths. I had a good attitude. I'd always train because I enjoy training. I used to work hard. Like I said, I don't think I was the best player by any strength or stretch of the imagination. So training was one of the things I enjoyed. And I try to say that to the young lads now. You've got to enjoy your job to get the rewards at the end of it.
So what about the celebrations? You must have been there for when the trophy...
Not until I was there for the trophy presentation. I was on the pitch. I was tracksuited up. So I got to walk around the pitch, medal around your neck. That's a different feeling. That was probably where I felt the saddest. I'd been part of that team. I'd been part of the squad for 2 and a bit years. Some of those lads I played with week in, week out. And then, like I said to you, not getting picked for the last half of the year. Season was hard. I wanted to play. I just wanted to be a player. I just wanted to play football. To be involved in the celebrations, for me, was sad. I have to say the bus ride around the city and things like that. It was sad.
teammates? You've played with some characters in your time at Preston. Any that stand out?
Ian Bryson. I still speak to Bryce. Obviously, he does match day now. Used to speak to the vein on his head on the pitch. So always used to have a good conversation with Bryce while he's playing. Simon Davey is a really, really good friend. I see Graham Atkinson, I see on a regular basis. And those players that you sort of hang around with, your mates off the pitch, and that's really good. We became friends as families. Moisey, we see every now and again, but like I say, he's got such a busy life now.
You didn't mention David Beckham, though. He was a teammate of yours.
He was a teammate of mine, yes, and I taught him all I knew in about 6 minutes. I mean, looking back at that, it's just a surreal sort of experience, really. He came, I remember we were training at Preston College, I think his first training session, so we're on AstroTurf again. Young lad comes from Man United, we get told he's coming. I distinctly remember saying to somebody, and Gary said that, you know, David's on corners, he's on free kicks. I was a bit of a senior player then. I'm looking around going, why is he taking our free kicks? What's he doing? What's he ever done? And I said, well, there you go. That's how much I knew about it. But yeah, looking back at it, to play with David Beckham, it's a strange thing.
How did he cope with you senior players? Because you must have played a few pranks on him, I suppose, back in the day. Those days when you could get away with it.
He was a quiet lad. Honestly, he came, he fitted in. I remember we had a night out somewhere. He came on the night out. He just fitted in. He really did fit in. And you could see his quality when we played the games. The free kick he scored from a corner. I remember sending him over to the corner and he scored from that. And you look back on it now and think, Jesus. The good thing for us was he left us, which sort of hindered us into the playoffs. But he left us and went straight back into the United team. And then I think the next season he scored that goal against Wimbledon, was it?
I suppose it was an era, wasn't it, when you didn't have mobile phones, so you couldn't get his mobile number and text him.
It was nothing like that. It's just a real strange. You look at it now and you think, you could keep in touch with these people. They could have been mates, and it is what it is. You know, but as you well know, you fall in and out of friendships quite easily in football because you have to move. You make friendships quickly. Players move on. There's not many you sort of stick around with.
I think that's what maybe a lot of fans don't realise, certainly for players in the game who you can experience so many highs and lows with, which you have throughout your career, and you're thinking, God, they're really close, they're mates. And you can be in a dressing room, you leave football club, you don't speak to them again for 10, 15 years. And maybe people will struggle to understand that. But in that work environment, like we're saying about David Beckham and some of your other teammates, you were so close to some
massively.
Of them, and yet you don't speak to them for ages.
Yeah, you go, like you say, you get. We were lucky to go through some real highs. And when you're going through those times, and I go back to the Cambridge period at time as well, you go through some really, really good nights out. Some things that nobody will ever experience. You go through games where you're in difficult periods, but you end up winning them. Preston was exactly the same. We had some real highs. And you go through some things with friends and teammates that, you say, you never see. Gareth Ainsworth, Gareth was at Cambridge. He then came to Preston. I played with him at both places. And then I saw him in the summer and we played at Longridge in a charity game before the season. And you're thinking, God, I've not seen you for years. But you follow them in the press. Mm. You follow them and you think, I know him. And as soon as you see him, it's like you've never been out of contact. And that's how it's really good in football, that players just click on straight away. Mm.
Talking of teammates, you mentioned David Moyes and you mentioned how it's hard sometimes to see players like Beckham and visualise what they could go on to do. But knowing Moyesy like you do, did you always think that he would become a manager and a top manager one day?
Top manager, I'm not so sure. Because again, we always knew Moyesy would go into management. Moyesy was one of those players. When I first moved to Preston, I was in a hotel. He was in the same hotel. There was a few of us that stayed there together. Most nights he would be out watching a game somewhere. He would go and watch a game. Wherever it was, there was a game on, David would go. And then when he moved out into his house and he got Pam and his family up, again, they were that sort of a family that they would invite you around, come and have tea with us, tea and toast, then you go. But he was always at games. David was always at games. And as soon as he sort of got the manager's job here, I knew that he would continue it for a while.
From your perspective as a coach, you're coaching the North End under 18s, working with John Welsh.
Welsh has been in now probably two seasons, full time coaching with the 18s. we have a same sense of humour. I think it's the footballing mentality. We're a bit daft at times. We're obviously a little bit old school because we've been through those eras. So you hear a lot about old school footballers and old times, and is it the right way of doing things? And I think you look back at it now and everything reverts back to it. Everything reverts back to you've still got to work hard. You've still got to be a good player. You've got to work for your teammates. And I think me and Welsh have the same sort of mentality in that respect. You have to definitely deal with people differently in this era.
Is that hard for you as someone who's come from a specific era, or has that been quite
I think
easy
I've to- learned to adapt. I think I've been in it now 12 full seasons, and you learn to adapt. You definitely can't speak to people how you would as a player, as you were probably spoke to when I was a younger player and in a dressing room full of senior pros. That's not on nowadays. That's not, it doesn't happen at our level. Whether players can handle that, some can, some can't, whether it's just not the right way for society, the way society's gone. So there's a lot more of being respectful to people and understand their needs rather than you just putting your beliefs onto people.
Can you tell a player off these days? Because when I was in the youth team and with Welshy, we'd have our talents off and we'd have to react or not. It was up
yeah,
to us.
Yeah, I have to say we do. We say telling off, that sounds really... So players have to know because we're trying to produce players that will go on to play in our first team, and they have to understand the importance of their job because it's a job nowadays. They have to realise the importance of doing their job right, understanding their role and responsibilities themselves, and respecting the teammates. So yeah, if things don't go right, they get told, but there's certain ways of telling people nowadays and players, and they respond in different ways. So yeah, you can still do it.
How do you communicate with players these days?
A lot of it is done through social media and at the training ground on WhatsApp. We have so many WhatsApp groups from the whole academy, from the ages of pre-academy up to under 19s. Players respond in that way. They understand that that's the way the media nowadays, and every now and again, there's a slip of the finger and a message goes into the wrong group, but it's just a different era. It's just a different way of responding and communicating with them.
Different sort of buzz as well as a coach rather than when you were a player?
Yeah, definitely. I think on the sidelines, we're both winners. There's an understanding that in youth team football, it's development. You have to, as a coach nowadays, be able to develop and stand on the sidelines and understand that things aren't always going to go right. As much as you can talk players through games, we've probably both had to learn to keep a little bit more quiet than we would as players, because I think we were both talkers. So yeah, standing on the sidelines and seeing the lads achieve or do something that you know you've worked on during the week or a few weeks ago and all of a sudden it's clicked, it's a different feeling, definitely.
You've done it for many years, over 10 years. Has there been a player in that time you think he's going to have a big career in the game? Straight away you think, yes, he's got it.
Josh Brownhill. When I first started here, Josh was just in the youth. His first year scholarship here. It wasn't particularly playing in the team, but he'd been recruited and come from Man United. From about Christmas time, he just took games by the scruff of the neck, and I know where he is now. And it looks like it's easy to say that sort of player, but Josh was a really, really good player. And when he got the opportunity to move up for the first team, he went and affected that training session. And that produced Josh, as in he went and played first team games.
Is that like winning a game to you to see somebody who you've helped coach, nurture as a young player to go and play in the first team, as opposed to maybe winning a youth cup or whatever league it may be?
That's difficult to say for me because I feel it's part of my job. So winning stuff, and I've been very lucky in the last few years that the teams we've coached have won things and done really well in FA Youth Cup games. The feelings you get after winning a tough game or a league, I still think is a euphoria for there and then. If you see a player doing really well and you can see him progressing, that euphoria sort of is tempered all the way through. You know, listen, it's a proud moment when they achieve, but I don't see that as just me or anything like that. There's all the people that have coached him before me to get him to where he is. And then ultimately it's the player that gets gets his opportunity. All we've done along the way has probably helped him a little bit. And all I would like to think is at some stage that player could look back and go, do you know what? Yeah, I had to listen to that, or I wasn't doing that right. And maybe they think of you as a coach.
P&E Pod. Subscribe to the podcast now and never miss an episode.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
P&E Pod, the official podcast of the one and only Preston North End.
After BNE, you went and played for Rochdale, you played for Morecambe as well, but you've always gravitated back to this club. Why do you think that is?
Lucky, really. Simon Davey was academy manager when I was probably working and looking to get into football. I was playing when I played played at Rochdale, like you say, played at Morecambe, and I went on to play for Lancaster. I was about 34 at the time when I had an opportunity. We changed managers at Lancaster and the manager came on and, yeah, you've got another year and do you want to stay? And Simon Davey had offered me some coaching and I think Ryan was there at the time coaching as well. So Simon had said, look, you've got kids, you enjoy football, I think you'd be a good coach, come and do some coaching for us. So I was like, yeah. And at the same time, I was working in the factory. I was doing three shifts. And me being me was like, yeah, I'll come and do that. And my wife, she looked at me and she just went, so where do you think you're going to get your hours from? When do you think you're going to spend some family time? And I was like, yeah, but I can do this and I can do that and I'll do this. And it was then that I sort of gave up playing. I decided that, right, if I'm going to go into coaching, I haven't got time to play. So I remember stopping playing. And then my first coaching session was horrendous. Absolutely horrendous. I was looking at, I was working down at the Youthland Sports Centre. Saturday morning, I got a bunch of 6-7-year-olds. I got a whole hour with them. It just blew my mind. I was like, whoa, how do you do it? Stop, stand still. I can't even stop, stand still. Hold your football. They kept throwing the football around. I was like, what am I going to do? But eventually I got into it and you enjoy it. And that's what I enjoyed. I was offered the chance to go to Barnsley as a chief scout. I'd done some scouting for Simon and I remember we were having a Christmas party at the house. I'd probably 8 to 10 bottles of Beck's in. Got a phone call about 10 o'clock at night. Simon, how are you? And we used to phone each other. I used to try and phone him when he was on interviews on TV and the phone would be going in his pocket. Just, you know, things that mates do. And he used to phone me from the dugout at 2:20 on a Saturday. So what are you doing? He said, oh, I'm just watching the warm-up. Kidder's taking it. Well, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just sitting here now. I'm bored now. I've got like 20 minutes before they have another team talk. So silly things like that. He literally phoned me up at 10 o'clock, says, I'm on my way back from Barnsley. I'm going to be announced in the morning. He was caretaker manager at the time. I'm going to be announced in the morning. I want you to be my chief scout. Sobered up pretty quickly. He said, come to the house. I'll talk through the role. Because me at the time was thinking, you've got to be 70 to be a chief scout. Guys in long coats and
clipboards.
Massively. Yeah. Thinking, what do I know about scouting? I'd like you to be my chief scout. So he said, get round to mine. I'm thinking, how am I going to get round to it? Oh, that'd be a taxi. My mum doesn't drink. So, mom, any chance you can give me a lift to Si? So I went to Si's, explained why I was leaving. Talked to Si about the job. I was still working in the factory at the time. And it was over the Christmas period. And literally at 2 o'clock in the morning, I come home. He gave me a lift home. And he said, I'd like to know by 7 in the morning. I was like, wow. So get in, you wake the wife up, you start talking about it. And at the time, I just didn't think it was for me. I'd coaching probably, but chief scout, I had no idea what I was into then. So I turned the role down with Simon and then went on to watch him and Kidder and Kellum have success. So I still did some match reports for them. Simon's a good friend. So we talked all the way through it. So I was following his journey from a little bit afar, but with a little bit of envy that I hadn't.
Regret that or that you sort of?
I think I regret it now having spoke to him now, what I know now about it to what I knew at the time of offering the job, then yeah, because I think the role would have developed in something else. So that could have happened one way that it might not have happened. So
regrets, it's a word you hear a lot in football and certainly people say, well, what advice would you give? Well, make sure you have no regrets in football. And is there any that you sort of think, oh, I wish that maybe that might have been slightly different?
Things like that, job opportunities sometimes that you don't think's right for you or the family at the time. And I think I'm level-headed to know that my family comes first and it has to be right for everybody. I'm not a selfish person in that respect. I would have loved to have probably gone and say, yeah, I'd like to take that role.
I was thinking playing days, not about your chief scout ability.
Yeah, playing days. I wish I was better. I don't know. I don't think so. Because I think, look back at it and go, I was very lucky. I was a lad that loved playing football. I got opportunities to do things that many a footballer now that doesn't get a chance to do. They don't have the success that I was lucky enough to be involved in. I'm lucky enough to still be involved in football. I love my job. I love playing football. So I'm going to say no to that because there's always things that can be better. Of course there is. And I wish I was a better player. I wish I worked harder. But I enjoyed my job. I love my job. It was great to be around the people I've been with. I've had some fantastic experiences. And I know no one can ever take them away from you. I've got a lad now that plays. I can tell you my worst experience in football, if you'd like to know that. I watched my lad playing for North End under 18s. Got his leg broken in the game. I was taking the game. That's the hardest thing in football I would say that I've had to experience.
And how did that happen? Was it a bad tackle? Was it an unfortunate?
It was
accident?
A typical, you'll know as a striker's challenge where defender's gone down the line. He's tried to clear a ball. Centre forward's come over, left his leg in. My son kicked the bottom of his studs. And I knew straight away he was in trouble. Lewis was one of these players that used to jump up from tackles and he stayed down. I knew he was in trouble. My wife was walking the dogs around the sports arena track, so she'd seen it happen as well. And I remember walking up the touchline, and we're playing Wigan, walking up the touchline, getting to dead level to where he was. He was only 5 yards on the pitch, knew he was in trouble, and thinking, I can't go on. That's not my job. I've got to leave that to the physio and let them get on with it. And I remember walking down the touchline, somebody made a comment that I reacted to just pure emotion, reacted straight back at him.
Must be so hard to manage your emotions in that moment because that's your son at the end of the day. I know you're the manager, but that's your
life. Yeah. No, honestly, that's why I'm saying that is the hardest thing I've had to deal with I've been released. And as you well know, things like that are never very nice. I've had to release young players. I've been part of that process. And again, all those things are really not very nice. The horrible side of football for me, but seeing my son obviously broke his leg. I could have gone onto the pitch. I could have gone on. I could have knelt down. It wasn't my job. And that was the hardest bit was stopping at the touchline and going, I need to let them deal with it because I wasn't going to be any good to him. Mm. I wasn't a fizzy. I wasn't. So I couldn't really control that. So like I said, I walked back to down the touchline, got the players in, and I had to sort of put all that emotion back into the players that were playing at the time. I let my emotions out at the end of the game, but they were to a certain person in black. That was probably my release. The ambulance came. I saw the ambulance in the corner. The game continued. As soon as the final whistle went, I shook hands with players and their staff. And I sort of walked past the referee. I was saying to myself, don't say anything, don't say anything, don't say anything, don't say anything. We'd had a little bit of communication during the game. So I was already mad at him anyway. So I walked past, I never said anything. And I got into the ambulance. My son was in the ambulance. My wife was in the ambulance. Got in. And ambulances have windows at the back doors, don't they? And I could see the referee and his two officials walking towards me. And I'm sitting there really clenching my fist. I was like, don't say anything, don't say anything. As soon as he got level with the ambulance, I flung that ambulance door open. I let him know how I felt about him and I slammed the door. And I remember the nurse going, ooh, you felt that, didn't you?
Have you seen that ref since, by the way?
I couldn't tell you.
No, okay.
No idea now. I just knew that I had to do it. It made me feel better. Didn't help Lewis in any way, shape or form, but it made me feel a little slightly better.
When you said about releasing players as being one of the tough things you've had to do, any players you've released who've gone on and maybe proved you wrong and maybe do things in the game?
Yeah, there's been a few players that have gone on to make careers, which is absolutely brilliant. And I think that's part of our job is to make the players, A, better people. They grow up from 16 to 18 while they're in, I'm going to say in your care. They're not in your care. They're under your guidance. And those players have to grow up and they're going through a difficult period in their own. And right, they've just come literally straight out of school onto the training pitch. They're in a job that they get told it's the job. And they then have to go through all these life-changing incidents and growing up periods that they're with the mates. Don't get me wrong. They go through all this stuff as well. So to then have a player that you possibly think might be good for the club. But at the end of the day, I work for the football club and the football club make the decision on those players. So there's been a few.
You're not naming any, are you?
No.
As you said, you're from Northamptonshire, but you've become a local over the years. You've got an affiliation with North End that's lasted years and years and years. So if you could describe your relationship with Preston North End in a few sentences, what would you say?
I came to Preston. I knew it was a big club. For me, a move to the biggest club that I'd played for. I was at Norwich City first, didn't really play there, but I'd been there. Cambridge and I, we were a small club, real small fish. Did really well in the times that I was there, really lucky. And then came to what was my first big club. It was like I had history towards it. Like I said, my first season wasn't probably my finest. I'd taken the place of a fan's favourite, and I'm going to call him Paul Masefield. I used to go around clapping the supporters and that sort of thing. And that's fine. I took his place. I wasn't particularly playing well. And I think it was my first season we played in the FA Cup. We played Kidderminster and there's a lot of people going to be listening to this smirking. It's something that gets brought up every year on Twitter. Played against a player that I was told, stay on your feet, jockey, he'll make mistakes. I backed off from about the halfway line into the penalty box. He crossed, they scored. Kidderminster went on to beat us in the fourth round. And pretty much every year I'm reminded of it. It's one of the things, like I say, comes up on Twitter. So I'm sure there are some supporters that will look at that and go, what are you still doing here? In fact, I have a few staff members that say it every year as well. Big North End supporters that say it. And then to win player of the year I turned things around with the supporters. When I left, I was on good terms with everyone. So to now come back, coach, and touch wood, been here as long as I have, which is honestly in football, fantastic. I love the place. I'm lucky enough to do a bit of commentating on iFollow. So I see the first team. I see how the first team operate. I'm hopefully producing players that are at this moment in time playing in the first team and with the first team squad. and have been over the years. And so that I feel is fantastic. I'm very lucky. That's how I see it. I'm lucky. I'm with a Preston lady, wife. We've been married 28, 29 years. So Preston's been home now for 30 years. My kids are here. I've got a boy and a girl. Daughter Olivia. They're fantastic young adults now.
And just to finish with, what do you tell the young Preston hopefuls in the under 18s? What do they need to do to get into the P&E first team?
Work hard. Work hard is the underpinning thing for me. They have to enjoy the job. They have to listen, take on board some knowledge. They have their own ability. There's some of that ability we can't teach. We can hone it and make it better for them. But work hard. If you work hard, enjoy your work, you've got a chance. And what I will say is, if it's not here, make it somewhere else in football, because it's a fantastic industry to be in if you're in it. It's hard. It's hard graft. And I know a lot of people see it as a fantastic lifestyle. And that's the pinnacle of it. That's what you see in the papers and the adulation of supporters when you win games. There's nothing that beats that. Nothing at all. They go through some hard times and they have to graft. They have to go through some pain, because that's part of life. But honestly, the lads that we have, if they work hard and they're better people ultimately at the end of when they came in, because they've grown up more, then I think we've partly done our job.
Do you teach them not to back off from the halfway line to the box?
I would be having a go at someone if they didn't put a tackle in, and it is what it is.
Listen, Fenners, it's been great having you on P&E Pod. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
P&E Pod, the official Preston North End podcast. This is a VoiceWorks Sport production for Preston North End FC.
Sports Social Podcast Network.